Hello again, and welcome to another episode of What's in the Box. I'm one of your hosts, Drew, or Quad Nines, here with my co-host, Zakeel.
How's it going, guys?
And we also have a special guest this week. You want to introduce yourself?
I'm Milo. I have a YouTube channel, Milo the Gathering, where I do cube-related videos.
Woohoo!
My fan! You're the guy who watches them!
Yeah, you may have seen his new holiday cube draft series, which is pretty amazing, but just really good cube videos in general. So
yeah, I think I posted the first one on Reddit on the MTG or on r/MTGCube, and a lot of people liked it. And if you guys haven't checked it out, definitely go check it out. They're excellent videos. The overall content, I personally think rivals anything that Wizards has put out ever. But for anybody who's interested in the cube environment in general, obviously you're probably listening to this podcast. But overall, just from playability to like the overall his inclusions in his cube to just like the way they interact, the commentary is just so far above and beyond. It's just an amazing resource for the community.
That's very nice of you to say. Thank you. I appreciate that. obviously, I don't see it as something that rivals Wizards, but a lot of people have been saying that to me, and hey, we'll take it. one of the things that we wanted to do was show that casual formats like Cube are also really interesting to watch in a high production value environment, because you very often have the opportunity to see high quality videos like on an SCG Open or a Pro Tour, but they're always playing things like Standard and the newest limited environment or Modern. But we wanted to do something a little different, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And Cube is the best format ever made, am I right?
By far.
By far.
And we can get into that a bit later on, if you guys want. So just in general, the first topic that we had today was playgroups. And specifically, I think one of the things that I have come across when cubing is... some of my friends are not necessarily casual, but they just don't play Cube very much. And obviously some of my friends from the store who I play, F&M with or whatever it is, are very, very competitive. So blending those two play groups, I'm sure many people listening have this problem, can sometimes have difficulties. What are you two guys like? Have you ever run into this? How did you deal with it? Anything kind of relating to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I make these videos, something that sticks out is that some players are really good at playing, but they're not good on camera, and some players are really good on camera, but they're not that great at playing. It's been really difficult to merge the two groups of friends that I had that I made at the store and friends that I had when I was in school and university. But for the most part, when you play with higher level players, you become a better player as well, right? I'm sure you guys have experienced that.
Definitely.
If you keep playing with the same group of friends all the time and they're, kitchen table, you're still going to remain at that level. But if you go to the stores, you go to GPs and you play against stronger players, you become a stronger player. And then when you bring that back to your group, everybody else catches up,
Definitely.
I don't know if that's been what you guys experienced. Drew, have you had a similar sort of thing?
Well, to be honest, like the times that I've either drafted somebody else's cube or we've drafted mine, it's probably been like some rotation of the same 10 people. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of them that like playing competitive, like Standard or Legacy Opens and stuff like that, but most of them just like playing cube and making sweet combo decks or something like that. We're actually trying to, I'm going to try and draft it, my cube at my local store this Friday. And I went by there last Friday, kind of talked to a few of the other people to see if they're interested in it. And there are some of the more competitive ones that are like, I'd just rather draft cons again And I'm like,
really?
Why? And he's one of the better players, and he can rare draft, play halfway decent and win like 10 packs. Because he's just one of the better players, but like he said, he doesn't like Cube, and I was like, "Well, you can not go." But some people would rather be all about the value, and
some people would be that way. Rather watch the world burn.
Kind of get that
with that player specifically. I've encountered this before as well, and in fact, I relate to that player. Like, why do I have a Cube, and I can get people together, and we can play at a store, but why would I want to do that if I could also go to another store and potentially win like $50 credit just by playing, right? If I'm going to spend my time, you know, getting a little bit of a kickback is nice. One of the things you could do is you could talk to your local stores and you could say, like, what if we charge $10 a head for this cube draft and then the payout is in store credit? Like, obviously stores don't want you playing for money there. But if you appeal to their interests as well, they'd also be a lot more happy having you guys come out and play a cube draft if you're spending money like that.
Definitely.
Yeah. I actually talked to the owner, and since you're actually able to sanction cube drafts now on FNM, it's going to be $5 a person, I think, and they're going to put in a pack per person into the prize pool. So we got it where we can win stuff, which is kind of good.
That's sweet. That's pretty cool.
That's awesome. That's good business for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Does make me want to kind of draft my mono red because it's fairly strong, but not near the fun.
I mean, that's when you have to start balancing it out. Also, something that helps balance the player base is by making your cube less consistent. Because I've seen a lot of cubes recently that break the Highlander rule, and like there's Justin Parnell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I've seen his cube recently, and he wrote an article. It's probably an old article, but somebody linked me to it about playing like 5 step lengths in cube, and like 3 brainstorm instead of preordain and ponder. And the argument is that those cards are more skill intensive, and so they get you to play better, and they're better than like something like a Spanaline or a Elite Vanguard. Step Links is better and they also have double the fetch lands, which make it better. But I think by making it more inconsistent, it forces people into situations and then they have to try to work their way out of it. They can't, you know, rely on knowing how to get out of a situation with the step links. They have to be like, okay, the situation now is that I have a Savannah Lion or I have an Elite Vanguard. Maybe if I play this Mayor of Averbrook, I can pump my Elite Vanguard, you know, just thinking out of the box a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not always about what's in the box. Sometimes it's about what's outside of the box. And I think that making your cube, sticking to that Highlander rule and making it a little bit more inconsistent, people have to sit down and just do their best, you know, with what they open. I think that one of the matches, I don't know if you guys, I guess you guys watched my holiday cube draft, the second match with Maya versus Chris Ha.
Was that the Simic matchup?
Yeah, the Simic matchup. Like, neither of them had thought that they were going to walk into the ridiculousness that they stumbled into. It was just like a terrible board situation, right? Like, and they were both trying to get out of that board. Like, Chris was trying to close out the game. I was trying to like fight him off. Every single turn was a swing. And I love that about Cube, that you could see a board state that you would never see otherwise.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And just kind of piggybacking on what you were saying, I think, cube design obviously is, you know, so different from cube to cube. And I think it really depends on what your goal is as a cube designer, because you have so much, kind of leeway in what you include, obviously. And I've also noticed recently that a lot of people are breaking the singleton rule. Yeah. And, for some reason, like, I was on MTG Salvation the other day, and I was just looking at some random, like, just random cube lists, and somebody runs 4 Bazaar of Baghdads. And I was like, that seems a bit ridiculous, but it was because his playgroup didn't understand Reanimator very well. And yeah. like he runs such a heavy reanimator theme only to like to push that kind of archetype.
To force feed players of reanimator. Yeah.
And it's just interesting. And I think there's, you know, what do you want specifically? And I agree with you in saying that like just the inconsistencies of you know, of every card being special or every card being different or doing something, I think is a bit better in my personal opinion than having three brainstorms or, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, all together, you know, it's the beautiful thing about Cube is you have so many different options and so many different things you can do.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that the general rule should be do what is the most fun for yourself and your friends.
Definitely. Definitely. And something interesting that I have come across was card choice per play group. And this kind of continues the idea of, you know, what do you actually include? And I know that a lot of people will cut cards that don't necessarily perform well. But at the like, and this was kind of some self-reflection I had, because when I first started cubing, I saw a bunch of people on YouTube. This was probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I saw a bunch of people on the forums. I didn't know exactly what it was. I had played the MTGO cube a couple times, but I took a carbon copy of, I think, White Wolf 123's cube. And one of the problems that we had is I didn't know what all of the cards were for. Like, so we kept getting last picked Burning of Zhinyi and Wildfires because nobody knew how to draft the deck. And I had seen it a couple times, and it's not because the card was bad. It's just because, like, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, nobody, it was just interesting. And there's so many, once again, so many decisions in card choice and what you want to include and what you shouldn't include and so on and so forth. But,
And that's actually a really interesting topic. I have a similar situation. When I started cubing 11 years ago, recurring nightmare tabled constantly, but all the time. But it actually makes you a much better player by playing cube, because you're forced into these archetypes that you're not used to. And then later, when Wizards eventually revisits things, you're like, oh yeah, I remember that. Or it helps you evaluate cards when you see spoilers. You're like, oh man, I know that combo is really good because I was forced to play it or against it in cube because these were strong cards. Even though I didn't want to play control, I'm not a control player. If control cards are passed to me in cube, I'm going to play them, right? Like, that's what my options are. So it actually makes you a much stronger player by playing cube. At least that's what I found.
No, maybe. Definitely. Well, yeah. I feel as though every time spoilers come out, the first thing I always think about is this good enough for cube? Like, can I play this card?
#cubeworthy, right? Yeah, that's the first thing I think of too. But now, I mean, I'm playing standard a little bit, and so I'm like, you know, is the deck that I currently play still going to be viable post rotation? Like, once these cards come in, that's the thing I'm really worried about, because it's always just such a gamble. Right, it's like, oh, all my cards are worthless now because they printed, you know, this. So that's what I'm worried about. But in cube, this new set looks like it has a lot of great cube cards.
I'm always sitting there looking at the spoiler and thinking, well, I don't know if I want to play this card, but the foil's cheap, so I'm gonna jump on it now just in case.
It's generally a bad idea to jump on foils like as a pre-order, right? Because everything drops.
Well, unless it's like common or uncommon, and just. Nobody knows it yet, but yeah, rares and mythics are pretty tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you can pick out the like the Monastery Swift Spear kind of foils, then you are going to be in good shape.
Other than the one that was spoiled today, the blue Path to Exile.
I thought I was the only one who thought that card was insane.
Yeah, it's way too good.
that card seems way too good. I don't have it up here, but so yeah, so I think that card will be excellent. Hopefully we'll, you know, get to see some sweet stuff from Fate Reforged. There's a bunch of really powerful cards coming out. I'm really excited to get to when the set review comes out. Or when the full set is spoiled, I mean.
Absolutely.
So, Holiday Cube. Did you guys do the Holiday Cube?
I, incinerated many tickets playing that. I usually played pretty well, but I'd always try and jam that one last draft. And then what would happen was I'd draft my deck, play the first round, and either win or lose, it'd be pretty fast. So while waiting for the next round to start, I would fall asleep at my laptop and wake up when I got kicked out. So it's like no more tickets. So. But no, it was a lot of fun. I liked most of the cards they put in it this time.
Yeah, I don't know. I have such mixed feelings about the Holiday Cube. I felt that the cube may be a bit too big. And this is something, I always change my philosophy on powered cubes so much. Like I'm in favor one day and then I'm out of favor. Like it really sucks. And I'm not sure if this is the algorithm they have or whatever it is, but I'll play against someone who has six pieces of power and I will try to draft this like, okay, like legacy cube playable mid-range deck, but you just get completely stomped out. And it's not I feel like it's almost a bad representation of what a powered cube is, because I don't think that like a powered cube is necessarily wrong, but I think it's just if they're trying to distribute all of these cards, like when I drafted the legacy cube, there was no way I ever got Stoneforge and Batterskull together. Once again, I don't know if that's because they've put in specific algorithms to stop them being, you know, next to each other in packs. Or maybe, you know, I don't know what it is, but it's just, it's kind of irritating, to be honest. And then there's all kinds of, like, craziness. Like, I don't know. How did you guys feel about the vault, the time vault combo?
I don't think it's, like, it's too good. Like, the problem with time vault in cube is that it's either the worst card ever and you can't put it in your deck, or you have something that untaps it and it's completely unbeatable.
Yeah, and the other thing about it, the thing that disappointed me is that they put in so many ways to use it, but like the same thing you're saying, that it's completely unplayable or it's broken as all hell. So, yeah.
Like I don't even like Voltaic Key in a cube unless there's a time vault. Do you know what I mean? Like, I guess you can play Voltaic Key with like Mana Vault and Grim Monolith and things like that. But I still, like, I feel like it's not good enough unless you have a heavy artifact theme, and cubes with heavy artifact themes are generally powered cubes already. Yeah. The power is just, like, why do you need to make power better?
Yeah.
Like, why do you need that Talarian Academy and the Metalworker to go with your Black Lotus and your Mox? Like, shouldn't your Black Lotus and your Mox be, you know, pretty good by themselves?
Yeah, exactly.
I know what you're saying, because, like, every time I opened up a pack that had Time Vault in it, I'm like, well, I take it. And if I get away and untap it, it's like you're saying, it's the best card in your deck. Otherwise, I just sideboarded my first pick.
Yeah.
You know, and it might not be power in the pack, but there could be something like, even something like Mull Drifter. You know, like you always know what you're getting out of that card. It's always a good card. So, but like at the same time, I never wanted to pass it because I didn't want to have to play against it.
Because it's an instant win, right? Like,
unless you have the mana up with like Abrupt Decay or just something like that, like there's no getting around it hardly.
But you can even play into a situation where it's an instant win if they don't know that you have Time Vault, right? Like,
you can
dedicate all your resources to getting them to tap out. Like, that's super easy.
Well, I was telling Zakiel, one of the drafts I won, I went turn two Signet. He taps out for something. Turn three, I went land, vault, key, go. And just, like, started doing it, and then he just automatically scooped as soon as the key resolved. And he wasn't a blue deck, so I didn't have to worry about him countering it.
That's a good way to spend $12, right?
Yeah, no.
I mean, did you have fun? Was that better than a movie?
I think it's just, it's almost just, I don't know, I just find it unfun. At the end of the day, it's like, you know, I really want to play Magic. Of course, this is powered cube, so we can expect more higher power things. But to the point where I played, I think, like six drafts, I lost two or three of them to Vault Key Combo. Like, I don't know. I just don't understand what the aim was. And I'm not sure if that's because another thing about that is I don't know if the cube is too big, because obviously you get such a high level variance the larger your cube is, or it's just maybe I'm drafting with people who just don't understand the power level of certain cards. I don't know, but there was too many inconsistent consistencies for me in that cube.
Yeah. I actually got beat by Pestermite Kiki Jiki twice.
Yeah.
But that's a little bit different. They're creatures, you know, they're easier to kill.
Yeah. I don't know. And I think both you could play both of those cards in decks without the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also got beat by Kiki Jiki Inferno Titan. Also good.
I've Splinter Twinned an Inferno Titan in the cube. That was fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just, I like playing on MTGO and everything, but stuff like that. And I actually had a similar experience. One of my local friends who has an actual powered cube, like super above and beyond crazy. I don't know how he spent this much money on this cube. And it's weird because the archetypes that they push are specifically for their playgroup, but sometimes it's very difficult to transition a new player in, if that makes any sense. Like, mm-hmm. they had specific cards that were errated a bit differently, or they had...
Were they playing, like Suchi and Rookig?
They were playing some weird, I don't know, some of the Jinns from Arabian Nights, like, the weird, I don't know. Not Serendipa Freed, but like the weird. I don't know. It was the archetypes that they were pushing were so foreign to me that it was very difficult to draft the deck. And the thing that I usually default to is just some mid range deck with, you know, a couple four drops that are going to hopefully win me the game.
Yeah.
But I'm losing. Like, I lost to Infinite Turns because they push. They have Time Warp in their cube and Tamiyo and stuff like that. And not that anything's wrong with that, but it's not something I would generally expect. And I think that's something. I don't know if. You guys have ever had that experience with a player playing your cube or maybe cubing someone else's cube, but when you include maybe fringe strategies, like once again, Time Vault and Voltaic Key, I don't know if you should make the drafters aware that the combo is there or what.
Yeah, I definitely think that you should let them know that it's there. One of the big lessons on cube that I learned was when I started bringing my cube to stores, and playing with it, and I realized how difficult it could be for a new player to just jump in and play the cube. The thing that was the trickiest was realizing that you have to take out the red herrings, because sometimes there's a situation where you have a card in your cube and you think it's just a fun card, and it's like, maybe nobody will draft it, but maybe somebody will and it'll be good. But most of the time, nobody's drafting it because they know it's not good in your cube. So an example of that was like Yagamas Will or Yagamas Bargain were both cards in my cube. Yagamas Will is still there, but Yagamas Bargain was in there, and people had assumed that there would be ways to abuse the card when they jumped in and drafted. So they'd pick it really high, and then they'd be like, oh, this card sucks in your cube.
Yeah.
And it would be like just an unfair advantage that all of the old players or the players that were familiar with your cube had.
Yeah. And something that I've personally done, I'm kind of like a neat, like, organizational freak. So I created this like really small flowchart almost of the archetypes that are represented in my cube. But I feel like it just makes it easier for people who don't, like, once again, who don't have the experience of what your cube is. Because, like, for example, or the other thing is that a lot of my friends don't play Magic very often. So what I kind of did was, like, here are some key cards for each deck. If you pick a Splinter Twin or a Kiki Jiki, here are some cards that'll make your deck better. And it's not, like, guiding them through drafting as much as it is just, like, okay, you know, this is what I expect. Because you could show someone your list, but at the same time, you know, where's the fun in, you know, drafting a new cube when you just know every single card that's in there.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
When I draft a new cube or a cube that I'm unfamiliar with, what I usually lean towards is playing blue-white control, because it's generally decent in everybody's cube. There's a lot of like staples that are always around. You'll always have some bounce, some counter spells, some mass removal spell, and like one or two threats, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's usually what I kind of lean towards if I'm unfamiliar with a cube. And then also you don't have to like assume, you can't be like, oh, I'm playing an artifact theme or aggro is really good in this cube. So you can't make assumptions. You just got to go with what you open. So usually what I try to do is go blue-white control if I don't see something ridiculous.
Definitely. And like I said, piggybacking on the idea we were just talking about is that one of the cubes that I drafted recently had Nekusar, and that was the last pick Nekusar. And I was thinking, like, should I try this? Like, is this good? And apparently,
or is
in that
it
list,
a joke?
Yeah, well, no, exactly. Like,
if I play this, am I going to be laughed at? Or, you know, do I really want my opponent to draw cards for one life? Like, for only, the, like, an extra card for paying one life? Is that actually good? I don't know. So,
like, I guess if you had a deck with, what, like, Winter Orb and Baby Jays and one of the Hate Bears that lets you only play one spell a turn, you could make a deck out of that. So it seems kind of hard to do. I don't know.
That's just...
Seems like a challenge. Yeah.
But I think that those are the better combos in Cube, the combos that are challenged, not the Time Vault will take.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Exactly.
Although it's just so much easier to play Mono Red.
I don't know, I was watching, who was it, Marshall from Limited Resources, and of course, he drafts a pretty sweet deck. It's a blue-black, slight artifact theme, and turn one, his opponent goes Mountain Goblin Guide, or Mountain Swiss Spirit, just one of the better one-drops, he's like, uh-oh. And he just happened to get, he happened to have Sphinx the Steelwind. So he got to tinker it out by both games. Otherwise, he's just so dead to Mono Red with the Dirtle deck. So
yeah. Tinker's another one of those cards that are like, that's like arguably Time Vault time, like it will take you.
Yeah.
It's like, do you really want to support this? Like, oh, turn one Blightsteel, your turn. Like, it happens like once in a while they're able to pull off the combo, but when they do, it's kind of like, well, what are we doing here? Are we playing Magic today? Or
yeah, exactly. Just
show off. Like,
well, and one of the thing that I like about Tinker more than I do maybe some of the other combos is that you're usually tinkering for a creature, which can be dealt with a lot easier. But no, I definitely agree with what you're saying. It's just,
I mean, Tinker's in my cube, right? Like, I'm just playing Devil's Advocate.
Yeah,
like, for sure, that's exactly what I think as well. Like, some of the best games that I can remember playing ever in my life are when my opponent did the most unfair thing imaginable, and then I came back and won.
Definitely.
Like, sorry?
No, definitely, yeah.
Like that's exactly what I want in a cube game. Like, I don't remember every time I've won or every time I lost, but if you ask me how I won when my opponent ultimated Karn, I can remember every turn of that game. You know, like, these are just like, if somebody goes turn one Blightsteel, and then you go, your turn two Gilded Drake, like, you're going to remember that forever.
Oh, speaking of Karn, how good is Clever Impersonator? Like, I didn't think it was as good as it is, and then I played with it a couple times.
That card is amazing.
Yeah, I think it was... I still want to be on the fence about it. Like, I said it was good in that initial video, and then I thought about it, and I was like, this might not be good. And then the Holiday Cube Draft happened, and it was really good. Like, it was a fantastic card. So I'm not 100% sure, but it seems like it's really interesting, and that's the important thing.
Yeah.
It's just so many different things it could be. Like, I don't know. But another card that I want to get y'all's opinion on from playing the Holiday Cube that I did like was Duretti from the new the Red Commander deck.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, of course, you have to have some artifacts in your cube. I've got a few in my build, so. But he just, every time I drafted him, if I had any kind of artifacts, it just seemed like so hard to lose if I got to activate him twice.
Yeah, I really like him. I personally, I'm trying to get a workshop here in the next couple of weeks, but I really like the artifact theme decks. Like, I think it's just a different way of looking at Magic, and it's just, once again, for me personally, it's a different deck you can draft, as well as the majority of the cards being good in other decks, which I think is very important for if you're trying to push an archetype. But, yeah, I really like Duretti. He was a snap include in my cube. I know a lot of people don't, but he's, once again, one of those fringe key cards that can either make or break the deck. Like, you can either draft him and really not have anything out of him. I guess, I mean, the looting ability isn't terrible, but if he is in the deck, he is insane. But me, personally, what did you, Milo, did you have any experience with Duretti by any chance?
No, I'm actually not even sure what this card does. It's the Planeswalker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the Planeswalker. Yeah. He's got the... his plus is like a faith up to... discard up to two, draw that many. His first minus is you can sacrifice an artifact... basically Goblin Welder. You sacrifice an artifact and bring them back from the graveyard. And his ultimate doesn't really matter, to be honest. It's like basically any time an artifact leaves the...
So it's like Goblin Welder. Like,
pretty much.
I don't have an artifact theme in my cube, so I didn't pay too much attention to him. But it seems good. If you have the artifact theme, if you have the Goblin Welder already, and the the Metal Worker and the Tolarian Academy and all those things, then why this guy seems fine. This guy seems good too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't really have like archetypes like that in my cube. I try to keep it as open as possible. Like control, like blue white control is an archetype, or mono red aggro is an archetype. Mm-hmm. But they're not like artifact or like goblins or you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Not that it's wrong or anything. And I think that there's a lot of really fun cubes that do have archetypes, and in fact, fun cubes that are designed top down. So like they want bent to be a thing, and then they want red to have all the artifact themed stuff, and those cubes are fun as well. Actually, can I share with you a cube that I played recently that did something very different that I was actually kind of impressed by?
Yeah, of course.
Is this a forum where I can share something like that? it was a cube that broke the Highlander rule, or the Singleton rule, and it had multiples of certain cards in it, but then it didn't have a lot of utility lands. It had, one of each fetch land and dual land, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then not a lot of fixing outside of that. But then after the draft was over, they laid out a bunch of utility lands face up, like rotisserie,
mm-hmm.
and they assigned point values to certain lands. So, Sheldock Isle was worth 3 points, or you could take, a Keswick Wolf Run that was 2 points, or you could take, the Vivid lands, which were 1 point each for mana fixing, or if you don't need the mana fixing, there's still something in there for you as well, based on the colors you're playing. And it's not something that I would do with my cube, but man, if for a cube that I play maybe once a year, that's a lot of fun. That's
awesome. Yeah.
Very different than what I'm used to.
It's funny you mentioned the rotisserie style. That seems something I'd like to try, but I've always heard the stories of the drafts just taking just infinite amount of time.
Oh, man, you know what my friends and I used to play? We used to, there was this coffee shop that was open 24 hours, and it was, just in, a factory district. So, nobody would be there on the weekends, and it was just empty. And, this guy would just be there by himself in this empty coffee shop, and they had the perfect drafting table just sitting there. So we, stopped in one time, and then we were like, nobody's ever in here, and they have a perfect drafting table. So my friends and I would get together, and we'd go there, and we'd stay all night. Nice. We would draft from midnight till 8 a.m. And one of the things that we would do is do a rotisserie draft, which takes forever. For those who don't know, rotisserie draft is you take all the packs that you would have in the draft and you put them all face up on the table, and people draft that way with everything face up all at the same time. But we would take it one step further and make it a bidding draft. Have you guys ever played a bidding draft?
I have not.
Not for Magic, though.
So you start with 100 points. And then if it's my first pick, I would point at a card and I'd say 1 point. And then in order, in a circle, the next person could say they're passing on it or they're bidding 2 points.
Oh, wow. That sounds awesome.
On every card.
That's pretty sweet.
And so you do that on every card. So Sol Ring would go for 30 points. and then you'd be left with 70 points. And you're oh my God, I hope I can put a deck together with 70 points. I guess I have to play 20 land Sol Ring.
Oh man, that seems awesome.
It takes a really long time. Be prepared to take the draft takes 2 to 3 hours.
I've heard people doing it over over email or internet throughout the week and plan on actually playing the games on Friday. But then you get the guy with the spreadsheet seeing what deck you're going after and just hate drafting against you in the middle round.
Yeah. And then you could, if you do it that way, you could also allow trades league. Mm-hmm. And so somebody could draft a really good card that they can't possibly play, but then they could just put it in their sideboard and then offer trades throughout the week trying to get their deck completed.
That sounds so fun. That is awesome. Holy cow.
There's a lot of different ways to play Cube, which is one of the reasons why I love it. And it's, once you have the Cube built, It costs you nothing to try new formats. Like, it's not like, hey, do you want to try Rotisserie for the first time? Let's buy all these packs and hope we have fun. Like, once you have that cube, you can just draft it however you want. You can come up with formats, right?
Yeah.
That's how these formats get created. And people just come up with them. So you should just go for it. I remember once we had we would often have five people show up, and you know, like, cubing with five people sucks because that one person just sitting out. So we created a format called a Team Draft Juggernaut Sealed. So you would have two packs draft, one pack sealed, and there'd be two teams of two and one person who was the juggernaut who had double the sealed pool.
Wow.
But they picked which player they would play against on each team.
That's awesome.
It was something that we did.
That's pretty sweet.
And it wasn't the best format, let me tell you. But but that's the point, though, is to have fun with your friends and play Cube.
Oh,
and
man.
Play it however you want. Put in five Steplinks if you want. If your friends loved Steplinks, if everyone played during Zendikar block, why not?
That sounds so fun. Wow. And that's like you just said, that's the best thing about Cube is those memories of doing wacky things or making those crazy decks or coming back from the turn one Blightstealer. You know, for me, what Cube is about. Like, you just have so much fun. You can't do that in Standard. Like, oh, man. But continuing on here, I kind of want to do like a recap. So we have the set review episode for every set that comes out, but not a lot of shows do kind of like the aftermath. Like, have any of the, not necessarily like it was a disaster aftermath, but have any of the cons cards that you guys have, that you guys have included, have they been, you know, have they exceeded expectations? Was there something that we didn't initially see? You know, for example, we were talking about earlier, you know, for the debate on Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time. I still run both of them because I think they're excellent cards, but I know some people don't run one or the other. So, you know, what specific cons cards that came out, you know, what are you guys' opinions on them and how have they changed?
So I tried the both of the Dig and the Treasure Cruise. I think they're both fine. One of the ones that I was actually surprised about was the Warname Aspirant. Like, I thought it was going to be really strong, but it is a good card, but there's just so many other things like it that if I didn't have it, I don't think I would notice.
Yeah.
Do you have a Gorehouse Chainwalker and Borderland Minotaur in?
I've got Gorehouse Chainwalker. I skipped on the Borderland Minotaur.
Or Borderland Marauder.
Marauder, yeah, the 1/2 that attacks is a 3/2. Yeah,
I think it's better than Gorehouse Chainwalker.
Oh, and there's also Stormblood Berserker. Is that what it is?
Yeah, Stormblood Berserker is one of the best ones, right?
Yeah, I kind of like it better than all those in there, just for the block claws on him, seems like the, all the time.
The best one, though, the absolute best red 2-dropping cube is Porcelain Legionnaire.
In creatures, I'd actually agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best red 2-drop.
No.
It is a red 2-drop. Don't be...
It is a red 2-drop. You're forgetting about the other red 2-drop that's not red, and that's Shrine.
Oh, Shrine.
If I resolve a turn 2 Shrine in my mono red deck, I've probably like 85% win rate in that game. It's just like I'm gonna kill you. Just take your time.
Your opponent's like looking down a barrel of a gun the entire match. It's just like waiting for it to fire. Yeah, I agree with you. The thing I love about Shrine of Burning Rage is it's so red because your game plan is so obvious. Like, it's in front of them the entire game. And they either can deal with it or they're just dead. And they know exactly what you're planning. It's all on the table.
It's funny because it's kind of like a poker player with a bad tail. Like,
yeah.
If you can see them trying to do math in their head, they don't have artifact removal. If they're just sitting there all calm as it's like it's at 7 and you're tapped out, or then they're like, I'm just going to blow that up on upkeep. But like, if they're just sitting there, you can see just the math, like, okay, it goes up one, and then he plays a spell and it's at this, and like, I'm dead. So if they're sitting there doing math, then you're probably safe from any kind of Ancient Grudge effect.
Mm-hmm. Trying to think.
Yeah, one of the cards that I was really I didn't have high hopes for it, but I tried it out anyway, and I wasn't impressed. Was Herald of Anafenza.
Yeah, me too.
It's unplayable for sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody else got to the same conclusion I did, but that was one card that I, in particular, that I was like, the reason why I tried it was because it was very different than every other card that I've seen. Like, I haven't seen a card quite like that, a one drop white control card. Like, it was interesting enough to try it and hard enough to evaluate because I haven't played anything like that in Cube before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did the same thing. I really, really liked that card, and it just kind of fell off.
I'm glad y'all said that, because it's in my Cube still. I don't think it's ever been in any deck, or even, like, yeah. I didn't even draft it on Cube Twitter yet. It just doesn't pop up. It's hiding, I guess, but now I know I don't have to worry with it.
I think you got to cut it.
I'm sure.
It's got to go, Drew.
Sarkhan, obviously, for me, has been great for the red deck. Is there anything else? Oh man, I can't remember what else was in. Hold on.
I'm gonna add the three color cards. I haven't added any three color cards yet, but I'm definitely going to. I just want to add the whole, like, I want to add 10 three color cards all at the same time. So I haven't.
Sorry, go ahead.
I've thought about adding more morphs, because, you know, the morphs are back, because I can play, like, my Exalted Angel and stuff like that's a little bit more sneaky because there's more morphs going around. So that made me want to add Sagumaller, because, like, how do you beat a flip Sagumaller if you don't have a board? Like, it's just, it's like some Sky Swallower, but you can pump it. Well, I mean, I'm talking about, like, if they just, like, untap, like, say, I play a morph, and you're like, that could be, you know, you think through the things, it's like, it's probably like a Willbender or something, you just, like, tap out for whatever. And I flip it and just bash you for six, unless you just have the board wipe or the, you know, can make me sack all my guys, then it's...
Or the
it's
council's judgment or the...
Yeah, yeah. So, like, it's a very small number of answers to it, but it's just the fact that as a morph, like, it's just the surprise factor, I guess. That's probably the best morph that I can think of that came out in the set.
How many gold cards per guild do you have?
Per guild, it's anywhere from 5 to 7.
Oh, so it's not like have 5, some have 7?
Yeah, I think the smallest one is 5, and then a couple of them have 7, but it's cards that I consider gold, like Burning Tree.
Noble Hierarch.
Or like, not like Noble Hierarch, but like the Emissary that gave you 2 mana for free that just rotated out. Like, that's in the Gruul section, but it doesn't have to be Gruul, but it pretty much is.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got your all the other Fuse cards that don't have to be, like, Far and Away doesn't have to be Dimir, but it just helps, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think I would play Far and Away unless I could do both.
Yeah.
But,
so, yeah, I have 7. But.
What about Rattleclaw Mystic? Have you guys...
I think it's been fine for me, but I don't have a lot of data to support that claim.
Yeah, I haven't got to play with it enough, but just the fact that it's a mana fixer that can fix 3 colors and ramp you, but you don't have to have green mana to play it or flip it.
Yeah.
So that's just, it seems like a lot of utility.
Mm-hmm. There is a card I've been super impressed by, but it's from Commander, Dual Caster Mage.
Yeah, me too.
That card's been way better than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And it's always interesting. Like, I heard a story. I didn't see it happen, but somebody far and away, an opponent, and then he had the Dual Caster Mage to copy the Far and Away, bouncing the Dual Caster Mage.
Oh, man.
And if you had 6 mana, he could do it again, right? The spell's still on the stack, so.
Jeez.
Yeah, I suppose you could. That's right. Now, another commander card. Have y'all played with the green planeswalker, Freylies? I think is how you pronounce it.
No.
I played with her in Cube, and I think she's actually a lot better than I thought.
Yeah, I didn't think about... I love some elves now, but I didn't think about including her until I played with her on Modo, and it's just like, if you have any board presence and you play it, and you make a Llanowar Elf, and like the next turn you're threatening to draw like... You know, if a couple of times you're starting to draw like 5 cards, or you're just getting wide with guys and making a lot of mana. So it's just in the deck, I think it goes in. I think it complements quite a, the things it's trying to do, either ramp or just get a bunch of guys to beat down with.
Yeah, well, and the minus ability is really good. Like, the naturalize is insane. I played with it in the Legacy Cube, just in a mono green ramp deck, and it was really, really good. That's one card that I was very surprised about that I want to include. I still haven't picked up a copy, but seems insane. Has anyone played Containment Priest?
No.
I shipped mine when it was insanely high on buy list, but I'll probably put one in eventually just because of the a safety valve for like show and tell or sneak attack or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I haven't played one, but I don't know. I'm curious to see how that's come up because I feel like it may be a bit too linear, but once again, I don't know. This is just my opinion. I have no idea.
The white 2-drop slot's getting a little tight.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially the ones from Fight Reforged and everything. So.
Yeah, that guy's definitely going.
And so you were talking about tri-colored creatures. I find it interesting because I don't know if I want to... Like, I want to play Doran, I want to play Maelstrom Wanderer, but I don't know, like, do you think... what is it? Savage Knuckleblade is better than Maelstrom Wanderer?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Thank you, environment. I'm not sure.
Because I don't have any of them, but I have a friend who has a cube that, and we speak a lot, and he was like, oh, we need something to get rid of this Maelstrom Wanderer. That's terrible. So I'm pretty sure, like, I trust his opinions, and he said that it is underperforming greatly in his cube. So.
Okay. Yeah, I have it. I have Maelstrom Wanderer in my queue, but no one ever plays it.
There's probably a reason. Most of the time, there's a reason, right?
Yeah, sad face. I like that card.
Well, you know, sometimes I think like a certain card will be in like everybody's cube list that you see on Cube Tutor or on like the Holiday Cube or whatever. And I could draft the card, and I'm like, is this card bad or am I not looking at it correctly? And occasionally I'll get surprised, like somebody will like play it against me and like, oh, so that's what you do, but. Mm-hmm. It has to be something kind of out of the ordinary with weird interactions for me just to miss it, I guess.
But mm-hmm. And one of the, sorry, go ahead.
It does seem to be some of those floating around, like you look at the list, like, is this card good? Why is this here? And then you just have to figure out how to use it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Another card that I actually saw in your Holiday Cube draft, I think Frank played, was Malicious Affliction. That card for me has done very, very well.
Yeah, I think it's good because it's a big effect that requires you to play heavy black. Like, it's a reason why you would want to be playing heavier black. And one of the problems in my cube right now is black because it's not the strongest of the colors. It's probably like the weakest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So having a reward like a Malicious Affliction is really good. Like you saw in that situation, that was like probably the best it could ever be, right?
Yeah.
If you're referring to when it killed like Restoration Angel and Baneslayer Angel,
yeah.
it's like that's pretty good. That's a pretty good situation when you're playing aggro and your opponent loses, you know, the Baneslayer Angel and their other angel.
Yeah. Insane. I think the card for me that is, there's two cards in multicolor that I think have stood out, that I was so much more impressed with than I thought I was going to be. I included Keranos, God of Storm. I think in general that card performed a bit better than I expected, and I like it just for control decks. I actually played it in a Legacy Miracles build that I was playing. This is kind of an off topic, but that card was phenomenal there, as well as Dak Faden. Like, I think Dak Faden is insane. I think he's just insane for me. I don't know. Depending on the environment you're playing in, if you're playing in a powered environment or something with and my cube has an artifact deck, the card is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the players in my cube haven't played Dak Faden yet. I don't know how good he is yet, but I'm keeping him in until I get a chance to play it at least once to see for myself. And I would pick it highly. Like, maybe I would pick Library and Sol Ring over it, but that's probably it. I'm really curious to see how well how good he is.
Yeah.
But the other card you mentioned, Keranos, God of Storms, mm-hmm. You are 100% right about that card. That was a card that I never considered ever until I played somebody else's cube. It's just this random guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up playing. It was funny. I walked into a store, and it was like seven people I've never seen before in my life. And they had all set up for cube, and the packs were all sitting there in stacks, and there was just seven of them there, right? and an empty seat, and literally an empty seat. I was like, do you guys play Cube? And they're like, yeah, why don't you sit down and play some Cube? I was like, all right.
That sounds like Christmas come early.
Yeah, I was like, this is so bizarre that all of you play Cube in Toronto. I've never seen any of you before in my life. But, yeah, I sat down and I played a Cube. I won, obviously. Come on, guys. but one of the people I played against had Keranos, and it was really good. It was very hard to deal with. I think it should go in, especially because I had a lot of trouble picking out my Izzet cards up until recently, up until Conspiracy came out. I thought it was the weakest of all the two color combinations. Like, there was like two or three really good ones, and then that was it.
Yeah,
but I think Keranos has got to go in, and I maybe going to take out Turn and Burn.
Yeah, because I got Dax Dufquid in mind, and Dak and Keranos. So I think I cut Fire Ice and going to keep Turn and Burn for right now. But I just generally like Fire Ice more. I was just trying to give Turn and Burn more time, I guess.
Yeah.
Looking at my...
I love Fire Ice. I think you're crazy.
No. Yeah, I have so many cards that do that, I guess. Like, tap things. But...
I'm going to draw you cards, tap things, deal 2 damage, no matter anywhere you choose. There's so many cards that do all those things.
It can't do all the things. It can do one or the other.
It does the thing you need it to do. Do you know how many times I just took advantage of tempo by going turn 2, tap your land during your upkeep, draw a card? Like... Just that alone is sick. It's a great tempo play to slow down the game or take control.
Just keep going. I think the last card that I have to talk about that I've been so impressed with is Song of the Dryads. This card, I don't know, for me personally, was so fun to play, and it's kind of like one of those color pie things. A lot of people say that it shouldn't be a green card. I don't care. It's so fun. I got to, I was playing the Legacy Cube, I think, and I got to Song of Dryad someone's Jace after I resolved something. It's like, oh, you can have a forest.
Yeah, forest with X number of loyalty counters. I don't know if the loyalty counters go away, and I don't think they do, but yeah, that card seems really good. I didn't even know it existed until people were like, what cards from Commander did you add in the cube? And I was like, Dualcaster Mage and Malicious Affliction. And they were like, not Song of the Dryad. And I was like, what Song of the Dryad? And they told me, and it was like, Green Oblivion Ring? This is way better than Beast Within. What the hell is Beast Within doing in
here? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, I'm totally on board with that. The I think it's a fantastic card.
Oh, man.
I got to see somebody, their opponent had resolved a Gristlebrand and drawn, like, cards down to 6 life, so they couldn't activate it again, and they saw in the Dryads his Gristlebrand.
Oh.
So he's got this handful of cards and nothing to, no way to gain life, no way to do anything.
Dead.
Yeah, but what if he had a green card that he wasn't able to cast?
True.
Now, all of a sudden, that Gristlebrand is sweet.
Well, that's up there. That's up there with when your opponent plays Urborg on game 1 and you just side in the Liliana Vest out of your sideboard that you can't cast, just in case.
I've not done that yet, but I'm going to write that down on the to-do list.
Yeah. Like, tap all your planes, Liliana Vest.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm trying to think. Anything else? Overall, I think just since we're in January, we can have a little mini recap here. What cards from the entire last year do you think were the best additions to Cube? I have a couple off the top of my head. You don't have to have like in any specific order, but I think the one that comes to me is probably the best, if not arguably top 3, is definitely Goblin Rabble Master.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been doing really well in my Cube, too.
Any thoughts?
So I haven't actually been able to cast Goblin Rabble Master in Cube, but it's just really good. I'm trying to think of some of the other cards from this year that have been really out.
Goblin Rabble Master just kind of fits so nicely into Cube because it does so well with a lot of maybe the underrated cards in Cube. So like with Hellrider, it's so good. Mm-hmm. Like it's the perfect turn 3 to turn 4. Or, like, with Goblin Bushwhacker, I don't know if that's in your cubes, but with Bushwhacker, it's also a crazy card. Like, there's so many really interesting cards that it does well with and made better. It was exactly what Cube was looking for this year.
Yeah. There's also, this is another card I forgot to talk about, Flesh Carver. Has anyone played this? And Flesh Carver, Hallowed Spirit Keeper?
Spirit Keeper, yes. I've been pretty impressed with that card. The Flesh Carver I haven't gotten a hold of yet, but everybody I've talked to that's played it said it's just really good and one of the better black cards in Cube, actually.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what this card is. Where is this card from?
This is from Commander, another Commander card you missed. Yeah. It's one black, two colorless with Intimidate. You can, so for a 2/2, you can pay one black, one colorless, sacrifice another creature, put two +1/+1 counters on him, and then when he dies, you get an XX black horror where X is its power.
Mm.
So a lot of people are saying this is one of the best cards from the Commander set for Cube, but I've been really impressed by this, and Hallowed Spirit Keeper as well.
But, that tells you something about black and Cube, too. Like, I guess it's okay, but, like, seriously, green gets Tarmogoyf. Like,
yeah.
Like this two in a black, I don't know. It's not Rabble Master.
No.
Like, why doesn't black get good cards? Hopefully in Fate Reforged. Fate Reforged is where I want my good black cards from.
Well, you know, for the mono dragon deck that you draft, you can one-sided wrath them now. With the 5-mana Black Wrath that you can pick dragons or not dragons.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, I had 2 dragons. I was real far behind this game anyway.
Finally, I think the last card I was impressed with was Hallowed Spirit Keeper. Do you know what that does, Milo?
I can pretend I do while I go to Gatherer.
I'll name it really quick for people who don't know, or some of the listeners possibly. It costs 2 white, 1 colorless for a 3/2 with Vigilance. And when it dies, put X 1/1 white spirit creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard. And I actually won a game with this card in the Powered Cube against sort of Body and Mind. I ended up blowing it up, but because they milled me twice, I had 10 cards in my deck. He couldn't attack through because if it died, I'd get like 21/1 spirits. So I was really impressed by this card, and once again, a Vigilance guy that has extra value is pretty good for me.
Yeah. And also, you kind of throw your opponents off, like in the early game, you're trading as much as you can, and then you drop this guy, and they're like, oh, okay.
Like Swords to Plowshares.
That's a thing. That's a thing. Well, see, that's when you have your Flesh Carver, and you sack it.
Boom! Combo!
Oh, man.
Guys, I hate to, but I'm gonna have to run, I think.
Yeah, no worries. All right, Drew unfortunately had to run. We're going to start to wrap up the show, but before we leave, since we have our esteemed guest here, Milo, we've been talking throughout the episode about your Holiday Cube draft. You know, where can people find this draft? You know, and what can we expect? You know, so on and so forth. Where can we find you?
You go to youtube.com/MiloDaGreatOne. That's MiloDaGreat, and then the number one. Or you could just go to YouTube and search Milo Cube, and I'll pop up. So you can check out my Holiday Cube videos. I know the holidays are over, but that doesn't mean they're not still interesting. So you can go back and watch them. It's in a easy-to-view playlist, so you could start it from the very beginning. We do player interviews. We do the full gameplay with commentary. There's graphics. You know what? I don't like to toot my own horn, but I think it's pretty good.
It's really good. It's really good. It's once again, like I said earlier, it's a great benefit for the Cube community, and it's just, you know, it apart from it being so good from like a gameplay perspective, it's just like knowing that the Cube format is being popularized and that people are actually doing this is what makes me want to produce better content, because like seeing what you're producing. It almost not necessarily in a competitive way, but kind of inspires me, like, you know,
this is amazing. I really want to do this. I love seeing other people's cubes. I loved how you guys had personal interviews. You know, you have a very personal experience with each of the drafters. And you also have some of your other, you know, I know that you have the Cube Championship Series. I think it goes around in the summertime, if I'm not.
Correct. It should be this time, like maybe July, somewhere around there.
Yeah, and you know, it's just, you have an excellent channel for just overall gameplay in Cube, and you post, I'm sure, I know you've been doing this recently, is a bunch of the Cube set reviews of anything that you're going to include. So, you know, excellent, excellent content. We're so glad to have you on the show.
And, you know what, you guys produce some pretty good content as well. I think this is my favorite, this is my favorite Magic podcast. And there's a lot of them out there.
Thank you.
But this is the one that I look forward to the most. You guys talk about the format that I love. You guys always have very interesting things to say. So it was a really big honor, being on this podcast.
Of course. Thank you so much for, I'm sure we'll have you back on. But to conclude this episode, I am Zakiel from Merfolk Magic. You can find me at Zakiel Gordon on Twitter. You can find our co-host that just left, Drew, otherwise known as Quad9s, at youtube.com/Quad9s. And you can find, once again, Milo at Milo DeGreatOne, or youtube.com/Milo DeGreatOne. So thanks, guys, for listening. Submit any topics that you want us to talk about in the comments down below. This will be hosted once again on YouTube and, what is that? not SoundCloud. Hold on. And it will also be hosted on MTG Cast. So for those of you who are following this from YouTube, head over to MTG Cast. I think you can actually subscribe and, you know, follow and see, you know, when we post new episodes and stuff like that. So anyway, guys, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.